This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
All right. Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry here with, I want to say special guest, but recurring guest, Eric Dahl.
Hey, that's right.
We're recording after the close today, March 3rd. I'm still in February time here. We're live on the Twitter Spaces again today. Sam's playing hooky again today. So we brought Dahl back in as usual to help talk markets and macro. And normally people would think that today's Pizza Friday being the first Friday of the month, but unfortunately we did not get a payroll data today. So we'll save that for when Sam comes back next week. Eric, here we go into the where are we section of the podcast here. Since we just finished February and, I was confused and still thought we were in February for a second there, we'll get into the what happened on the week and also kind of what happened during the month of February. So if you remember back to the end of January, we had a very good S&P month. S&P was up 6.3% or so. Reversed a lot of that in February, down 2.5%. So not a great February from that standpoint. A lot of the, as we go through these, you're going to see kind of a pretty big or the same similar theme going on where the everything that was up in January went down in February. So a little bit of a reversal. On the week, though, S&P was up 1.1%. So a pretty strong week there on the week. Looking like the we had three sectors that were negative. It was the same typical sectors that we've seen all this year. Utilities, staples, and healthcare all negative on the week. Utilities, the worst performer, down 2%. But it looks like financials actually eked down a slight negative there. The end of the week on a slight negative. Your best performer was materials, up about 3%. If we go back to February, looks like the consumer discretionary was up almost 13%. Communication service, or 13% on the year, actually down 2% on the month. Communication services down almost 3% in February, but still the second best performer, up 11.5% through the end of February there. So, tech looks like one of the lone sectors that was up both months. If you call up 40 basis points for technology in February, a positive, I'd say it is a positive, but certainly not what you would expect. But still ended February up almost 10%. Over those 2 months. The growth versus value growth was up 8% in January, down 1.2% in February. And then and value was up 5% in January and down 3.5% in February. So value gave a lot of it back. Now, looking at the end of February, the Russell 1000 growth was up 7% for the first 2 months. Russell 1000 value lagged behind a lot, only up 1.5%. Kind of go back to the week, though, similar numbers or similar trend where growth was up 1.25% and value up a whopping 30 basis points or so, or 0.3%. So you had a lot of reversals there, and the equity market came out strong, weakened a lot in February. Similar with the bond market, we had one of the best months ever, if not the best month ever there on for the Bloomberg Aggregate Index. Up 3% in January, was down 2.6% there in February. So kind of round tripped itself and only up 40 basis points there for the first 2 months of the year. If we look across on the week, it was also flat down to about 0.1%. Looking across the board there for the first 2 months of the year, corporate bonds were the best performer, up about 70 basis points, mortgages up 60, and treasuries the laggard, up 10 basis points. Looking interestingly enough, though, for the week, treasuries were down about 10 basis points, investment grade corporates were up 30 basis points, and agency MBS, the worst performer, down 50 basis points. A lot of that's due to the curve, or the treasury curve. So the treasury curve ended the, or the 2 year treasury ended the year of 2022 at 4.43%. It did rally to 4.2 there in January. And now, if those of you that are in the treasury market, in the fixed income market, knows that 2 years at very high levels, ended February at 4.82%. Naturally, right now, looking at the screen, it's 4.86%. So a big reversal there on the 2 year treasury. Similar 10-year. 10-year was down 37 basis points or so in January, gave up that and more, kind of rallied back to 392 there at the end of February, up 41 basis points. And then looking at it today, we're at 396. So actually, surprisingly, it came in a little bit today. It was kind of bouncing around that 4% level there on the 10-year, came back in, rallied a little bit to end the day and the week at 396. And then the long bond is, let's see, my screen was covering it, 388 there on the long bond. It was actually, is now down 5 basis points on the year. So it's interesting fixed income market here, Eric, where we're kind of going through, where we're kind of seeing things. It's been pretty volatile here over the past month or so.
Yeah, absolutely. This market has seen a lot of chop, and it's giving investors another opportunity. If they kind of miss the rally, maybe now's another opportunity to check out fixed income at these higher rate levels.
Yeah, I know. I guess kind of a rejection, the one-day rejection of that 4% level on the 10-year, as we always like to say, one data point does not make a trend, but we'll see how whether we get a more of a rally, a follow-through here next week, or whether we get kind of that higher rate levels, we stay above that 4% level on the 10-year. We move over to the commodity land. Commodities was the is still the negative performer on the year. Looks like through today, down about 4% on the year. If you remember, it was down very slightly, down 50 basis points for January, down almost 5% in February, and ended February down 5.2% or so. A lot of that's due to oil. Oil started the year at 80 and change, or WTI 80 and change per barrel. It's down to 77 at the end of February. It looks like today we're down to slightly above 77. So we're up 2% on the week, but still down 4%, or we were down 4% on a price basis there at the end of February. And kind of leading the way down in terms of your, if you look at your ags, your energy, your industrial metals, and your precious metals, they're all negative on the year, ending February, worst performer being energy, down 12.5%. A similar story here, even though did get a good rebound in energy this week, up almost 4% on the week, still down 11.25% there for the energy commodities on a year-to-date basis. Kind of rounding it out there, if we look at Bitcoin, it's done a pretty big, it was obviously had a very good January, has kind of round tripped it. We're at 22,376 per coin, 22,376 per coin, as Sam likes to say, down 3% on the week, but still up pretty substantially on the year, where we have it up almost 35% as of right now, as Sam likes to say, not as of the close, since it never closes, but as of right now, Bitcoin up 35%.
I think that's pretty comprehensive, and that brings us into the macro items of the week. And we started off on Monday with the durable goods orders, the January preliminary number. The print was -4.5, and that was 0.5% worse than the estimate of 4. That was a surprise, but it's a volatile headline print. The prior was 5.1. So the remainder of the report was kind of strong. We had durables ex transportation come in at positive 0.7%, which was a beat of the estimate by 0.6%. So pretty big beat there. We also had cap good orders, non-defense ex air come in at positive 0.8%, which was a beat of 0.8%. The estimate was zero. And then finally rounding it out, we had the cap goods ship non-defense ex air coming at 1.1%, which was a beat of 0.9% versus the estimate. So headline is volatile, but underneath that, it looks like maybe we're seeing some inventory building. Maybe we're seeing companies invest some more capital. On Tuesday, we got an update to the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller 20-City Real Estate Index. And month over month, it declined 51 basis points. The estimate was a decline of 40, so worse than the estimate. Year over year, though, the index is still up 4.65%, which is a little lower than the estimate of 4.8%. But I think you're really seeing the rate increases start to bite the housing market, and we'll continue to see the month over month number possibly negative. It's definitely something to watch. Something to state about it is we're now 4.42% below the seasonally adjusted peak from June 2022. So looking at non-seasonally adjusted prices, we're 6.25% below the June 2022 peak. So the housing pain is starting, definitely a sector of the economy to keep watching.
Yeah, I would say though that, you know, the pace of the slowdown has, you know, if we talk about how Jay Powell's been talking about disinflation, where the pace of inflation has slowed here, the pace of the housing price decline has slowed. So, you know, down 51 basis points on a month, while not great, and certainly worse than the 40 basis points that the market was, or that was projected. At least, it is down to those kind of basis point levels or 50 basis point levels and not percentages.
Yeah, that's a good point. The momentum is kind of slowing, but still negative. Definitely something to watch going forward. I'm sure everybody's thinking about this as they compare their current mortgage rate to the rate they would have to pay today if they moved. So you'd expect maybe, you know, people to only move if they have to, right?
Yep, that's right.
Going to Wednesday, we had the ISM manufacturing for February come in, and that was at 47.7, which was 0.3 below the estimate. And that's the fourth consecutive month we've been below 50. And the topic of the week, we're going to talk a bit about diffusion indices. So, but basically, we're having a bit of a contraction in the manufacturing space, which kind of makes sense intuitively from what we've been seeing in inflation. We've been seeing services really driving most of the inflation currently. So perhaps, you know, goods and manufacturing is starting to cool down a bit. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, but still, it's not, as people would like to look at it, it's below 50 contractionary, but the people that are kind of writing that number off are saying, you know, the market or the economy is much more than manufacturing now than it was, 50 years ago. So they kind of discount the manufacturing PMI numbers and focus more on the services PMI numbers, which I will not front run you on, Eric.
Yeah, absolutely. So just rounding up, on Thursday, we had initial jobless claims, which once again was relatively strong at 190,000, which was 5K less than the expectation. And continuing claims for the week ending February 11th came in at 1.65 million, which was a little below the estimate as well. So job markets stay strong. And I think that's driving a lot of the uncertainty in markets right now is, what is the Fed going to do? What's the economy going to do? That brings us into Friday. We got the ISM services index for February came in at 55.1, which was over expectations, definitely in the expansionary area, showing that strength, at least when you look at a diffusion index like the ISM services. More respondents are saying, well, they're having strength, and people are saying there's a decline.
Yeah, and the more and more you look at that number, the more you think that the December number, which was below 50 in contractionary phase, was the aberration. And the 55, we're at 55.2 last month. Looking at it, it's still in expansionary phase. So maybe the December was the to kind of, and we saw that in the retail sales number, December was also weak. So maybe there was some data collection anomalies there in December, or, you know, the conspiracy theorists will say that it's all these seasonal adjustments here in that we've had so far this year that are moving those numbers, the more positive numbers upward.
Yeah, I mean, the conspiracy theorists are always going to come up with something. You know, you can't hold them back. And that rounds us out for the macro for this week.
Yeah, it's, I think a couple of things to point out, or not really point out, but just to bring up is that if you look at the work function here on the Fed funds futures, I pulled it back just a month to the beginning of February, and the peak rate on Fed funds futures back then was at 4.89% on the June 14th Fed meeting. Looking at today, obviously we've had high CPI numbers, we had higher PCE numbers, we had very strong payroll numbers there on February 3rd. The WERP now tells us the peak rate is now in the September 20th meeting. So push that out past the July meeting now to September, and it's 5.46%. So a couple 50 basis points or so more in Fed rate hikes priced in, and the peak is pushed out to September. And really that's been the story from the Fed, governors and Fed presidents, where they're basically saying, they're still saying that they want to keep inflation in mind, that the outlook's uncertain. They don't want to, you know, one of the things that people are talking about is the Fed should just raise their inflation target from 2% to 3%, because 2% is going to cause a recession. So if they raise it to 3, then maybe they won't cause a recession. And certainly, I think that that's kind of a reasonable argument, but I think that the Fed loses all of its credibility if now in times of a higher inflation, they raise it to 3. If we were at, you know, if we were at 2, or if we were, you know, below 2, and they said, okay, we're going to raise our inflation target to 3, that gives you some credibility. Whereas if now if you raise it to 3, it just feels like you're giving up, you can never get it to 2. So I think that the Fed is going to push back against any sort of, and Jay Powell has pushed back about raising the inflation target. And, you know, similarly, you've had other Fed presidents come out, like Kesh Kari came out and, you know, said that he's open-minded about whether they hike at 25 or 50 basis points in the March meeting. But really, he thinks that, you know, the ultimate, and this is similar to what other Fed governors will say and have said, is that it's not really the pace that matters right now. It's really where they end up. So I think that, you know, while he says they're open to 25 or 50, if they say the pace doesn't matter, that seems like they're going to stick to 25, or at least that's kind of how my feeling or my interpretation of what they're saying out there.
Yeah, and I think that's right. And I think the thing to look at is the dot plot. When that comes out at the next Fed meeting, I think that's going to be the SEP. That's going to be a very important report to analyze and think about.
Yeah, and are they going to, you know, if we think back, there's been questions about whether the Fed's just going to, if the Fed stops, are they going to feel like if they stop and they pause, are they going to feel hard pressed to raise rates again? I think that if you think back to where we were last year, the Fed was going to price in, you know, 4 rate hikes during the year. So it was going to be once a quarter. I think the Fed could easily say, okay, we're going to slow down, we're going to pause. The next outlook is going to be for 25 basis points a quarter. As kind of a way to kind of bridge that gap but I think the Fed wants more time, more data to kind of see how things shake out. So that could be something that they kind of price in, but I agree. The dots are going to be super important on the March, I think it's March 22nd meeting. With that though, Erica, as you mentioned, we'll talk today about the topic of the week. Since we did get the ISM manufacturing and service PMI numbers, let's talk about PMIs and diffusion in a diffusion index. Focus first on the manufacturing PMI. They base the data, so the ISM, the Institute of Supply Management, they collect this data, they compile it throughout the month from purchasing and supply executives nationwide. Typically, they send out, what they say is they send out the survey at the beginning of the month, and the respondents are asked to report on the information for the current month of U.S. operations only. And they receive their responses throughout the month, but they actually say the majority of the respondents wait till late in the month to submit the requests to give the most accurate picture of current business activity. So that makes sense to me. You don't want to be reporting on March 3rd here today about what's going to happen for the rest of the month. It makes sense to wait till the end of the month before you report. Now, the PMI number the manufacturing PMI number is weighted based on the different sectors' contribution to GDP. If we go through the largest sectors, our computer and electronic products, chemical products, food, beverage, and tobacco products, transportation equipment, machinery, petroleum, and coal products. So pretty wide breadth there on the manufacturing side of things. And kind of what's important here is that the responses are, they say, how's the change in your manufacturing across the different spectrum of things that they survey for the current month versus the previous month? So it's a positive, same, or negative. And so the PMI number reflects the percent of positive responses. And then they take half of the responses that say the same, and they add that as kind of a, assuming that that half of those people that are the same are positive and half of them are negative. They do seasonally adjust those numbers, and they make annual changes to the seasonality adjustments. And then when they give out the headline PMI number that we just talked about, Eric, where it was 47.7 for the ISM manufacturing number, it's an equal weight of the different subcomponents that they do list in their report of new orders, production, employment, supplier deliveries, and inventory. So an equal weight across those different subsectors. And they say that a manufacturing PMI reading above 50 indicates that manufacturing economy is generally expanding. Below 50 is that it's generally declining, as we talk about every single month when we talk about these numbers. But they have run regression tests over time, and they say that a manufacturing PMI that's above 48.7, so today we're below 48.7, we're at 47.7, so we're below, but a manufacturing PMI above 48.7 over an extended period of time indicates the overall economy and GDP is expanding. Below 48.7 is declining. And they do say that, you know, whether we go from 50 to 47.7 or 48 to 47.7, is indicative of the extent of the expansion or decline. A little bit wonky there. I guess, you know, you could say 48.7, is that the level? I think 50 certainly, you know, I'd rather base it on whether people are saying they're surveying all these people and what they're saying, whether it's expansionary or contractionary. I would use that as a better gauge over some regression analysis. But I think the regression analysis will actually show you that, you know, because that level is lower, that maybe manufacturing means less to the overall economy, to GDP, than it was prior.
Yeah, I think that's an insightful point. They kind of have to juice it a bit. But
yeah. If we go switch over to the services PMI number, this is formerly the non-manufacturing PMI. The largest sectors there are real estate, the government, professional scientific and technical services, healthcare, information. I'm assuming that's like IT, information technology, and then finance and insurance. Now, the headline PMI number there is an equal weight of only four categories: business activity, new orders, employment, and supplier deliveries. And this says that above 49.9, so let's call that 50, just to keep things simple, is indicates the overall economy and GDP is expanding. So really looking at it is that 50 type level. Now, why do we care about these levels or these numbers? If we go back to episode 82 from September 9th of last year, Sam and I ran through, and more specifically Sam did, because he was the one that was talking about the topic for that episode, about the predictive power of a lot of these recessionary indicators. And when he did go through those numbers, the ISM manufacturing PMI, you know, that people like to use that data because it goes back to January of 1948. So you have 12 recessions since then, and it's called all 12 recessions, but it has 8 false positives. And he took the signal as you're less than 50 for at least 2 months, which we are today. So those of you that say that we're in a recession right now, which we heard today, Eric, one of our analysts has a model. He said calculated a 34% chance of a recession right now. So, you know, if he turns out to be right, then the manufacturing PMI will not be a false positive. If he turns out to be wrong, you know, 66% chance that he's wrong, I guess, that it's going to be another false positive for the manufacturing PMI data. If you do look at it over time, it does tend to lead recessions. But given the number of false positives, it's hard to feel confident that this number or this manufacturing PMI is a perfect recession signal. You look at the service PMI data, that only starts in 1997. We've had 3 recessions since then. And each time we had a recession, the services PMI data was greater than 50 at the start of the recession. and didn't drop below 50 until a month or two into the recession. So certainly that's more of a coincident indicator than a leading indicator. And there was one false positive when the services PMI dropped below 50 for a couple months and there was no recession.
Yeah, and I think one of the proof is in the pudding there. You just stated that there's a lot of false positives called. And I think it's worth discussing, what is a diffusion index? You talked about how the PMI is calculated, but these diffusion indices are really, as you mentioned, survey-based. And the surveys, you have three options. Either the area you're being asked about is expanding, it's neutral, it's flat, or it's declining. And let's say you're a manufacturing manager, either your orders are going up, they're flat, or they're going down. And a diffusion index basically subtracts the number of respondents that say their area is going down or declining from the number of respondents that said their area is going up or increasing. So for example, let's say a sample of six and you have two going up, two going down, and two saying nothing's happening, that will be a zero or a 50 or a 100, depending on what the base is of that diffusion index. So these readings below 50 generally are saying you're having more respondents saying there's declines than increases, and above a 50 would be more increases than decreases. But it gets a little confusing because some of these indice creators do not actually weight the indices equally. So they'll sometimes overweight positive responses or overweight negative responses. So you really have to just kind of take them at face value and accept that they're giving you this broad indication of what they're trying to measure, but it's really a measure of breadth. It's not a measure of the details. It's not a measure of the granularity. And you because going back to that example of six, if for example, the two that reported declines, the declines were 1%, but the two that reported increases, the increases were 10%, the index would be flat because the increases cancel the decreases in number. But in terms of magnitude, that's not put into a diffusion index and that you would lose that granularity. So you got to take these diffusion indices with a big grain of salt.
I think that's a good point, Eric. So people like to look at it. And I guess when you get a much weaker number, it just shows weakness across the breadth, as you said, and it's not necessarily the magnitude that you should look at as something that's, as a recession is coming, is imminent because the number is really weak. It just means that there's weakness across the breadth of markets. And as you said, it could be very, very minor weakness across the breadth of the manufacturing or services markets. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a better way to look at it, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a hard landing if we get really weak numbers, because it could be a soft landing across multiple sectors, subsectors, let's call it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You use these to kind of get a feel for what's broadly happening, but you've got to really drill into the details if you want to understand how deep of a recession are we going to have. You know, like you said, the rolling recession, the deep recession, the soft landing, the hard landing, everything in between. It seems like there's so many different ideas out there. It's kind of just obfuscating what's actually going to happen.
You forgot the no landing scenario, Eric.
Yeah, that's right. That's the new word of the week.
With that, why don't we get on to things to keep an eye on for next week?
Yeah, for sure. So on Wednesday, it's a pretty light week, but an important week nonetheless. On Wednesday, we get JOLTS. And Mr. Powell, Chairman Powell, dissed JOLTS last month because it came in super high. It came in 11 million. And he was just like, nah, it's a noisy indicator. And we know when the Fed chair disses an indicator, you know, maybe there's a lot to read into that. But the estimate is for it to decline by 500,000 to 10.5 million. It is, and that's for January, and that comes out on March 8th, Wednesday. So something to keep an eye on. That kind of shows you the supply and demand mismatch in the labor market. Then on Thursday, we get the initial jobless claims for the week ending March 4th. The estimate is for 195K, an increase of 5,000. We also get continuing claims. The estimate is $1.665 million, an increase of $10,000. But Friday is another really important day. On March 10th, we get the change in non-farm payrolls. The expectation is for 200K, which is a decrease of 317,000 from the whopper print in last month that was 517,000. So that's very important to watch. I think another important thing to watch is the labor force participation rate. The forecasters are saying unemployment's going to stay, the U3 unemployment rate is going to stay unchanged at 3.4%. But it'll be interesting to see if this labor market is drawing more participants. And so the current estimate for the labor force participation rate for February, 62.4%. It'll be interesting to watch and see if that pops up. And then lastly, we have underemployment. The U6 is, the prior was 6.6. So that's another number to watch.
Yeah, it's interesting. Kimbrough puts on here that there's only four estimates so far in the labor force participation rate. So economists can't, even though the data comes out every month, they want to wait to their, they want to wait to the last minute to get all the information put into their, maybe it's their AI models or what we were talking about earlier, their neural network or machine learning models to come up with the data that's going to give them, pretty much an unchanged number from last month.
Yeah, I mean, one of the problems economists face is you can't predict the future by mixing up the past, but that's what they always try to do.
And kind of to front run a little bit, the CPI data does come out on March 14th. So we do get that then the following week. And what will be interesting is that that's after the Fed blackout period starts next March 11th, that Saturday. So the Fed will not be able to comment, or the Fed governors or presidents won't be able to comment directly on the CPI. So, keep an eye on Nick Timiraos's Twitter feed to make sure that all whatever Jay wants the markets to think gets out there. So I think that'll be an important thing to keep an eye on for the following week. But obviously, we'll talk about that next week, and we'll see how that we'll see how the true Pizza Friday numbers come out, the payroll numbers come out there on the 10th. And with that, I think we'll keep it nice and short this week. Eric, I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in.
Yeah, thank you all to all of our listeners live and who are going to listen to the podcast on their favorite subscription channel. Make sure to catch every episode before the bell. We're available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Hit us up on Twitter at @DLineMinutes. Send us your questions, or you can email us at minutes@doubleline.com.
Yeah, and our website is doubleline.com, obviously. YouTube channel is youtube.com/doubleline capital. We uploaded a couple of videos from Yahoo Finance interviews from the end of the last week in February. You see Jeffrey Gundlach's got about a 20-minute interview. Luis Padilla's, we just uploaded that one. It's about a 9-minute long interview. Then also we have the most recent episode of The Sherman Show with Ted Seides. I thought that was an interesting one. You get a different perspective. He sits in the middle between allocators and managers. And so that was an interesting perspective there. Also, you want to make sure to listen and subscribe to the Sam and Jeff's podcast there, The Sherman Show. You can follow them on Twitter at Sherman Show Pod. Hope everyone has a great week.
Represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the expressed written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk.
Copyright 2023, DoubleLine Capital.